studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam. I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Sri Suresh Rao Savkur of Radio Sai. Suresh Rao Sir, as we call him, hails from Mumbai and is a chemical engineer by profession. He served at the Department of Atomic Energy, Mumbai, as a Class 1 officer and later joined the Bhabha Atomic Research Center and worked there for 19 years till his retirement. He is now settled in Prashanthi Nilayam, serving Bhagwan through Radio Sai from the year 2004. He is also a poet and has published many books. This talk, that is based on the Advaitic teachings of Sri Adi Shankaracharya and our beloved Bhagwan, was delivered in the Satsang Hall here in Prashanthi Nilayam on the 15th of December 2017. Interspersed and after the talk, we have some beautiful songs by Sri Kavalam Sri Kumar and Priya Sisters. And at 3:30 p.m. we have the live Telugu segment, Sri Satya Sai Divya Sandesha Jhari. And with that, over to Sri Suresh Rao Savkur.
The topic for today is the statement made by Sri Adi Shankara, the one without a second, and what our Swamiji has to tell us about this in his Vahinis. This is a Vedantic statement of the highest order, deals with the Shuddha Advaita philosophy. It little difficult to comprehend some of the high flown philosophical thoughts of Adi Shankara and Swami's explanations. But we'll try to delve into it for some time. Last time I had taken the part one. So before we go further, I thought I will slightly mention what we have done last time so that that continuity is felt. Here is a statement made by a philosopher. The highest wisdom is too subtle for most minds. And so a whole scheme of worlds, gods, bodies, evolution, etc. has to be given out because people seem to find it easier to believe all these things rather than believe the simple truth of the one reality, the Atman or Self. What it means is that we live in a world of duality, of name and form, creation, preservation, destruction. And it's very difficult to come to the transcendental state, the source from which all this arises. Because we are so much engrossed with the sense world, the sense objects, that we lose sight of the truth behind this. To explain this, we talked about what Adi Shankara says in his two doctrines. The doctrine of limitation and the doctrine of reflection, it's called. Shankara gives an example of a pot. An empty pot made of earth, you know, the earthen pots of those days. He says there is space inside the pot and there is space outside the pot. So we think there are two different spaces. But moment the pot breaks, the inner space and the outer space become one again. They were always one, but because of name and form, we thought this space was different and that space was different. But moment the identity and attachment to the name and form is given up, that is when the pot breaks, the space becomes one, and there is nothing but space everywhere. So that is the reality of the truth being one without a second in reality. Then Adi Shankara has given another example, the doctrine of limitation and the doctrine of reflection. We talked about limitation of the pot. In this doctrine of reflection, he says, the sun is in the sky, and there are several earthen pots filled with water. See, in those days they didn't have any sophisticated technology like we have today. So they give examples of very earthy examples, you know, very simple examples like the pot, earthen pot, the sun and things like that. And the relationships in nature. He says the sun is reflected in all the pots in the water. And each pot gives a reflection of the sun. The reflection may be wavy, it may be dark, it may be partial, but still it is a reflection of the sun above. Now this reflection of the sun in the pot, we call it the jiva. And the sun in the sky, which is one, is the Atman. So each one of us is like a pot with water and the sun reflected in it. That is the jiva. Each one of the jivas is like that, Adi Shankara says. It's identification with the pot and the water that makes you think you are the reflected sun. But you are in reality the Atman, the original sun itself. And this reflection is only an illusion. So he tries to bring our attention to the one at every point and give up the many. See the one in the many. That is what he is trying to say. That is what Swami also explains. The one in the many. And the many as one. Once Swami said, I am the source, not the force. See, this statement is again going leading you to that particular realization. I am the source, not the force. How is it? Because we have seen manifestation of force from Swami. His miracles, his great works, his compassion, his so many other qualities. And we look upon him as a great spiritual force. But what Swami is driving is that the source from which this force arises, that is important. So he says, I am the source, not the force. We give importance to the force, forgetting the source. Just like we see a multi-story building and admire its beauty, its grace and its stability, etc., etc., we forget that this multi-story building has got deep roots on foundation, which we cannot see. But we are getting carried away by what is seen. The unseen is forgotten, lost sight of. Similarly, the source is lost sight of and the force is evident to all of us because we live in the world of senses, sense objects. So the one is forgotten and the many is evident. That is again Maya. In the Bhagavad Gita, last time I mentioned this, we see the great significance of this statement, the source and the force, in Lord Krishna's actions. You know, when the Mahabharata war was to take place, the armies, Kauravas and Pandavas, they were trying to gain kings from other states to participate in the war. On their side, as far as possible. So they want to know whom Krishna is going to side. The Kauravas and Pandavas. Because Krishna has got a great army, the Yadava army, very powerful army from. So Duryodhana and Arjuna come to meet Krishna. We mentioned this. And Krishna pretends to be asleep, lying in his bed at that time. So Duryodhana comes first, but he sits at the head of Krishna. Arjuna comes second, but he sits at the feet of Krishna. With the result, when Krishna wakes up, the first one he sees is Arjuna. And he asks Arjuna, oh, when did you come, Arjuna? What is the matter? What can I do for you? And then Duryodhana is upset. He says, Krishna, I came first. He says, yes, you may have come first, but I saw Arjuna first. That is one thing. And then he says, what can I do for you also, Duryodhana? And he says, I know you have come because you want to see which side I am going to fight for. He says, well, there are two things. One is my Yadava army, which is very powerful and has won many wars. That is on one side. And I am alone without weapons and not participating in the war except as a charioteer. Now you can choose either one of them. Arjuna immediately says, Krishna, I want you and you alone. I don't want your army, but if you are on my side, I'm happy. Duryodhana is very happy. He says, this foolish Arjuna has selected an unarmed person to fight and is only a charioteer. What can he do to me? I'll take the powerful Yadava army. And he is very happy. And he says, Krishna, I am satisfied. I will take the army. And Arjuna, you can be with Arjuna. So we see this contrast, you know, the source and the force. Krishna without weapons, Krishna who is not fighting the war, Krishna who is only a charioteer on one side. The source. And his army, the powerful Yadava army, is on the other side, the force. Now we choose what we want, isn't it? Arjuna's nature, as you know, being what it is, he chooses Krishna. But the majority of the people who believe in force and power, etc., etc., they will naturally choose the army. So that is the difference between the spiritual approach and the materialistic approach. And you know what happened at the end of the war, who won. So we see, it is the source that is very, the spiritual aspirant has to concentrate upon and not the force. We get carried away by the miracles, okay, very nice. But the source from which that miracles come, that is more important for us. Same thing with this creation. We are, see the beauty of the creation, very nice. We are enamored by it. But the rishis, in ancient times itself, they said, if this creation is so beautiful, how much more beautiful must be the creator? They are going to the source. Is that? The creation is the force, but the creator is the source. And the rishis aimed at realizing the source, the creation, creator, not the creation. So the subjective approach, they said, this world of Maya, this world of nature, we see, is full of change, change, change. The child is born, grows into a boy, the boy grows into a man, the man grows into an old man, and he disappears. Appearance, disappearance. Change, change, change. Same thing with the world outside. Same thing with me and you. Our desires change, our mind changes, our body changes, our thoughts change. Today I may say I would like to vote for BJP. And tomorrow I may say I would like to vote for the Congress, as you know in what is happening in Gujarat. So everywhere it is change, change, change. The rishis were not happy with this kind of life. They said, no, we don't want just change and evanescent, transient, temporary things. We want the source which is permanent, eternal, everlasting. And we call it the Atman or we call it Brahman, depending on. And so the Upanishads, the Aranyakas, the Brahmanas, all the sacred scriptures of the Vedic times dwelt only with this source, the important thing. Of course, it gave rise to other things later on. But the rishi's aim was to realize that source and thereafter everything else comes. They ask this question, what is that knowing which everything becomes known? That is the source. What is that accomplishing which everything else is accomplished? What is that enjoying which everything else is enjoyed? The one without a second, that is the source. So we see the approach of the rishis. For thousands of years it has been going on, and for the next thousands of years also it will continue, because that is the truth, the everlasting truth. And so India has survived through all the onslaughts of time and tide, because we have stuck to this ideal set up by our Vedic scriptures, by the rishis and the avatars. Adi Shankara has told about three types of truths. You see, we always get mixed up with truth when we say truth, you know. Truth is the source, okay. Then what is all this we are seeing around here? Change. That is also relative truth. We call it relative truth. And the other, the absolute truth. That's the only difference. Relative truth is very important for survival in the society, in life, for leading a good life. And that's where all the relative truths come in. For example, if I go to a court, put my hand on the Gita and say I will speak the truth and nothing but the truth, that is a relative truth, no doubt, but then that is very much essential, otherwise society will collapse. And so the man who doesn't tell the truth can be punished or prosecuted. So relative truths in society and absolute truth for realization. This is the way dharma and karma are related. So Shankara calls it the vyavaharik truth, that is the samsarik truth, that is the truth we have as jivas in society and how we have to live there. But he says there is another kind of truth, the paramarthik truth, the transcendental truth, and that is the one without a second, what we call. This paramarthik truth is what the source we call it, and that is what the rishis have been talking about, what Vedanta talks about, and that is paramarthik truth. When Adi Shankara says Brahman Satya Jagat Mithyam, Jivo Brahmaiva Na Paraha, he's talking about this truth. He says, Brahman is truth, Satyam. Jagat Mithyam, this world of change, transience, temporary, is illusory, what he calls it, Mithya. And then he says, the Jivo Brahmaiva Na Paraha. This sounds contradictory. He says the jiva is not separate from Brahman. How does he say that and what does it mean? Now, there have been a lot of discussions by scholars. But the essence, I will say, is the jiva, when it sheds all its limitations, misconceptions about itself, will merge in Brahman. In truth is Brahman. But because of self-imposed limitations, self-imposed thoughts, etc., he has limited himself into a finite, limited being. So Vedanta puts all the responsibility on our shoulders, on each one's shoulders. He says, you are Brahman, but by your own, what you call, misunderstandings, by your own ignorance, you have calling yourself limited, finite, perishable commodity. The fault is only ours, it's not anybody else's. That's what they say. So Vedanta expects each one of us to rise above these limitations we have imposed on ourselves and realize the true nature of our being. See, That's what Swami says when somebody asks him, Swami, are you God? He said, yes, I am God. But you are also God. The only difference is, I know I am God, whereas you don't know you are God. And who is responsible for this illusion? We ourselves. We have imposed it on ourselves. So, the fault lies with us. So, Swami has given many ways of contemplating on this. Through the three schools of philosophy, you know, Dvaita, Vishishta, Dvaita and Advaita. For example, the Jyoti meditation that he has taught the students here as well as the devotees. He says, first you have to meditate on the light and you say, I am in the light. Or rather, the light is before me. You keep a lamp, lighted lamp, and then you meditate with looking at it all the time. Gradually, the idea is to take the light within, see. From I am in the light, it becomes the light is in me. That is the Vishishta Dvaita state. And finally, when you meditate on that light within, you ultimately realize I am the light. This is the step-by-step way of Swami's meditation for illumination. There is a difference between the light is in me and I am the light. You can see that. When you say light is within me, there is still duality. That is called qualified duality. Vishishta Dvaita. There is I and there is the light. Two things. But when you say I am the light, duality has disappeared and alone, the one alone remains. So when the Upanishads say, Brahmavid Brahmaeva Bhavati. Knower of Brahman becomes Brahman. Knower of light becomes light. There is no duality there. And so, Brahman is one and you are one with it. The oneness. Somebody says, how can it be knower of Brahman becomes Brahman? Just like you say, I know this, I know that, and I know so many things. But there is always duality in that. There is a knower, there is an act of knowing, and there is a thing known. But when you say knower of Brahman becomes Brahman, duality disappears and there is only the one. So knower of Brahman is one. There is no duality. It has to be Brahman itself. It's like saying, suppose you hit an arrow at a target. Does the arrow become a target? No, the arrow is separate, target is separate. But the moment, Adi Shankara explains this, he says, from the Upanishads he has taken it. He says, just like a river flows gradually into the sea or the ocean, losing its name and form and identity, it becomes one with the ocean, so also the knower of Brahman becomes Brahman. There is no identity of the river once it merges into the ocean. The name is lost, the form is lost. The identity is lost, the individuality is lost. That is how Brahman is realized. For majority of us, our individuality is very important. Name and form is very important because of body consciousness. If I give up my individuality, I'll be nothing. So that's very scary. But in spirituality, that is the only true way of realization. That's why Swami keeps saying, give up the ego, give up pride, give up this, give up that. This jivahood is itself an illusion. So how to get rid of that illusion? By giving up whatever attachments the jiva may have, whatever ego he may develop. See, It's a little painful process in the beginning, no doubt. Give up is not physically giving up and going into the forest. Giving up is the mental attachment and the emotional attachments that we build up over the years and develop over the years. But it has to be substituted by love for God or the Guru or the Avatar. And then it becomes easier. Automatically it falls off. So this Atman which they talk about has been compared to, Swami compares it to, gives beautiful examples to make us realize the value of the Atman or Brahman. At one place he compares it to the lion. You know, you have heard this, Swami has told in his talks. He compares it with the lion. The Atman is the lion of the Atman, he says. Now the lion is the king of the forest. And when the lion roars, all the animals flee, they say. So lion stands for courage. Lion stands for truth, actually. And the animal qualities all flee in the presence of the lion. That's the idea of calling it a lion, the king, the supreme. That is the Atman. That is one way Swami explains. Another nice, beautiful example Swami gives for the Atman is sugar, sweetness, sweetness of sugar. Suppose you ask him, what is sweetness? Nobody can explain what is sweetness. He say, it is sweet, that's all. Isn't it? Similarly with the Atman. You can tell what the Atman is not, but you cannot tell what the Atman is. By negative process, neti, neti, or whatever, not this, not this, by process of elimination. For example, if you ask the man what is sweetness, he can only say, it is not sour, it is not salty, it is not pungent, it is not etc., etc. Not this, not this, not this. And then finally, when his vocabulary is exhausted, what remains is sweetness. That's why we say it's beyond speech, beyond words. Realization of this truth. Words and speech fall short. Ato vachya nivartante aprapya manasaha. The mind fails to understand this. Because mind itself is a product of coming out from the Atman. How can the mind understand that because of which it has the power to understand?
You are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. Stay tuned.
Rama Rasam Rama Rasam Pibare Pibare Rama Rasam Rama Rasam Pibare Pibare Rama Rasam Pibare Rama Rasam Pibare Pibare Rama Rasam Pibare Rama Rasam Rasani Pibare Rama Rasam Pibare Rama Rasam Rasani Pibare Rama Rasam pipare ramarasa rasare pipare ramarasa pipare ramarasa ramarasa జనన మరణ భయ శోక విదూరం శోక విదూరం జనన మరణ భయ శోక విదూరం సకల శాస్త్ర నిగమాగమ సారం సకల శాస్త్ర నిగమాగమ సారం పిపరే రావస రసే పిపరే రామ రసే పిపరే రామ రసం రామ రసం పిపరే శుద్ధ పరమ హంసాశ్రమ గీతం శుద్ధ పరమ హంసాశ్రమ గీతం శుక శౌనక కౌశిక ముఖ పీఠం శుక శౌనక కౌశిక ముఖ పీఠం పిపరే రామ రసం రసరే పిపరే రామ రసం రామ రసం రామ రసం పిబరే రామ రసం రామ రసం పిబరే
Welcome back, dear listeners. We will now continue with the talk by Sri Suresh Rao Savkur. This talk was delivered in the Satsang Hall here in Prashanthi Nilayam on the 15th of December 2017. Stay tuned.
See, the source is really the source, even for the mind. How can the eyes see that because of which the eye is able to see? And so on, all the senses, etc. So we see that this is a subjective process going deeper and deeper within ourselves to the source. And that source, we say, is the heart. The heart, purified heart. And Om, the Maha Mantra is what leads to it. That is one of the ways of sadhana to realize. If you see the Sarvadharma emblem that Swami has put up. For Hinduism he has written, listen to the pranava om resounding in your heart as well as the heart of the universe. Now this is a very, very deep statement. Does it mean there is a separate om for my heart and separate om for the universe? It is one. Your heart becomes the heart of the universe. That is the status of the Atman. The realization of that great truth is the goal of every rishi, every man, modern or ancient. So we see how tremendous were the goals and ideals of the rishis of Vedic times. How tremendous is the goal of the spiritual life. We should not associate spiritual life with mere trinkets, like Swami says. It is like going to a Kalparuksha and asking for coffee powder, Swami says. Swami says, I am the Kalparuksha, capable of giving you the highest realization. But you come to me and ask for coffee powder. What can you do? So our aims, our thoughts, our everything has to be raised to very, very high levels, lofty levels of understanding, of appreciation, of realization, for realization. We are carried away by the mundane bodily comforts, bodily attachments, mental attachments, emotional attachment. But the highest attachment is to go for the realization of the true nature of man. That's the Atman. So Swami therefore calls spirituality like the letter O. O is Purna, complete, full. And science and materialistic sciences and other knowledge, he calls it as letter C. There's always a gap in between. You can never fill that gap through objective sciences and through objective studies. And for this, we see that the cultivation of the heart is the most important. We give importance a lot to in our education system everywhere to the head. We give a lot of importance to the head and not to the heart. And therefore we have, as Swami calls, evil genius or what you call, all head and no heart, see. The head has got its reasons, logic, etc. But it is the heart that feels compassion, love, etc. And so that has to be encouraged and developed more than the head. Because that will take you to the source. The head can reason out things, use logic, etc. But the heart can get inspired and be filled with intuition. It can raise higher, it can take you to deeper within. So the head and the heart, we call it 3HV, head, heart and hands, as Swami says. So let us not be satisfied, as Swami has said at one place, considering ourselves as human beings with a spiritual experience. We identify ourselves as human beings. We limit ourselves to human beings. And with the spiritual experience, you as Swami gave in my dream, I had this experience. Oh. So we go by this kind of experiences only, spiritual experiences and a human being. But the truth is the other way around. We are spiritual beings with a human experience. We have come from the God. Come into this world of samsara, get entangled in it, unfortunately, and forget our way back to the truth or the source. So we are spiritual beings with a human experience, and if we realize that this human experience is only an illusory experience, the jivahood of man, and it can be transcended, then what remains? You are a spiritual being first and last. You are spiritual, you are spiritual, and you will continue to be spiritual being. The spirit. That is the one without a second. As Shankara says, when truth is known, where then is this world? If you are a spirit, first and last, then where then is this world? We give so much importance to the world. We are carried away by the world. Like somebody came to Ramana Maharshi in the 40s. And he said, Swami, there is a world war going on. People are dying, thousands, millions. Are you not affected by it? A very valid question, isn't it? Do you see any advice for us people? So Ramana Maharshi asked him, who has created this world? He said, God. See, here is where we mix up things, you know. He says, if God has created the world and He has also created you, then God will take care of the world and you. Why are you worried so much about the world? It may sound like an escapist answer, but in truth, that is the correct way to understand spirituality. So, when truth is known, where then is this world, says Adi Shankara. The world of senses, the world of sense objects is all our limitation caused by our attachment to the senses. In the Nirvikalpa Samadhi state that the sadhaka attains, all this disappears. Name and form also disappears. And Maya is nothing but name and form. When you say you have to cross the ocean of samsara, what do we mean? That phrase is very common, crossing the ocean of samsara, without knowing what it means. Samsara is again duality, name and form, bound by Maya. When you cross this ocean of samsara, you are going into the ultimate source, that is nameless and formless. And then, where is this world of change? Where is the world of transience? Where is the temporary world? Everything. You are gone into the everlasting permanent state. Just like in a dream, you see you are a king and you have so many servants and luxuries, etc. And when you wake up, they all disappear. Or you have a dream where you are a beggar and you are begging and starving. And you wake up, you realize it's a dream, give up. This was Janaka's experience, King Janaka's, see. How dream state, waking state, deep sleep state are all relative states. Waking state also is identically a relative state. You can't say this is the absolute state. Because when you go into dream state, you become changed there. You become a king. Now that state is real in that dream state. And this state is real in this waking state. Like Gaudapada says, the great guru of Adi Shankara's guru's guru. Water from the waking state cannot quench the dream thirst. So the Turiya state, what we call the fourth state of consciousness or the constant integrated awareness state alone can take you beyond the relative states of waking, dream and deep sleep. It is like the thread that runs through the garland. And Krishna says, I am the thread in the garland of flowers. Turiya state is like that. It is the thread of consciousness going through all the waking state, dream state, deep sleep state. Once that is realized, Suppose you have a dream, and in that dream, as I said, you think you are a beggar and you are starving and you are suffering. You wake up from the nightmare, the jolt, and you say, oh my God, what a dream. I'm glad I'm awake and come out of it. That is because you took the dream for real. Now, if you are in a dream and you are in that constant integrated awareness state of Turiya, then in the dream itself you will know it is a dream. And when you wake up, you don't have that worry that you are having a terrible dream. Similarly, that constant integrated awareness state is there in the waking state also. For the awakened person, he is awake from the waking state. He has woken up from the waking state, and that is the Turiya state. Oh, I am Mr. So and So. That's also a dream. I am the father of so and so. That's also part of the dream. I am the brother of so and so. That's also part of a dream. I was born on such and such a date. That's also part of the dream. I will die after some time. That's also part of the dream. You have gone beyond the dualities of life. Good, bad, right, wrong, birth, death. Imagine what a great state of being that is. So we see that these rishis had attained to this level of understanding. Somebody came to Ramana Maharshi and said, Swami, I want to write a biography on you, your life. And he started asking questions. What is your date of birth? What is the name of your mother? What's the name of your father? Where were you born? Ramana Maharshi started smiling. He said, there's no such thing here. Because it's part of the illusion and he has gone beyond. I was born becomes an illusion. I shall die becomes an illusion. The birthless, deathless state. All relativity is transcended. All dualities are transcended. All opposites are transcended. Joy, sorrow, right, wrong, good, bad, justice, injustice, happy, miserable, beautiful, ugly, all these things are transcended. What a state. So this is all for another example the Upanishads give, what little I have read about the Upanishads, to explain this state, A mango seed can give rise to a mango tree. And that mango tree will give rise to innumerable mangoes with mango seeds, right? That's the way this creation works. But can a mango tree give rise to a Karela tree? A mango seed cannot give rise to a Karela tree, bitter Karela. So, the Brahman, which is nameless, formless, transcendental, free from opposites, free from limitations, you say it has given birth to this universe, this world, given rise to this. It is just like saying, mango seed has given rise to a Karela tree. There it's permanent, everlasting state. How can it give rise to a state which is transient, temporary, changing, opposites, good, bad, etc., etc.? And so Adi Shankara says, it can never do that. It is an illusion. How beautifully they come to the realization that this universe is a mithya. It's like a mango seed has to give rise to a mango tree. But here you see a mango seed has given rise to a Karela tree. So it has to be an illusion. It cannot be the truth. That is how the Maya theory has developed in our scriptures. Same thing with Lord Dakshinamurti, that great Lord Dakshinamurti, Advaitist, Supreme Advaitist. We see his form in this colleges, no? Swami has made the junior college. The sage is 18-year-old sitting under a tree. And his disciples are all old people with beards and hair. Long hair. That is the sage Dakshinamurti. He says this universe is like a reflection, is like the image of a city in a mirror. Image can never be the original, right? It's like an image of a city in a mirror. What you see in a image of a mirror, in a mirror, is a virtual image. It's not even a real image. Your right half becomes the left half. Your right hand becomes the left hand. You see that? It is not the same as the original. So it is illusory. Swami explains this great statement of Dakshinamurti in a simple way to the students. Once he asked them, what is 3 minus 1? And the boy said, Swami, 2. Everybody said 2. Swami said, no, in spiritual mathematics, 3 minus 1 is 1. Your worldly mathematics, it's all right. He said, Swami, how? He said, suppose there is an object, there is a mirror, there is an image, 3. Now you remove the mirror, what remains? Only the object. That is the Brahman. Mirror is the Maya, and image is the Jiva, or the world also. The moment the mirror is removed, that Maya is transcended, what remains is only Brahman, one without a second. Brahman and Brahman alone everywhere. So what Dakshinamurti has told thousands of years back is still very valid today. And Swami has come to interpret and explain these truths. So we see the importance of our scriptures, the Vedic scriptures and the Vedanta philosophy. And why many of these foreign scholars are praising it. You know, Max Muller, Schopenhauer, Ralph Waldo, Emerson. So many of them have got great, because of the heights to which it has reached, the heights to which they are gone to understand truth and life. No other religion has been able to explain, expound this kind of truths to that level of understanding. Yes, it has been said by Christ, it has been said by Zoroaster, it has been said by all the great ones as statements. But like when Christ says, man is born in the image of God, that is the truth, great truth. Or when he says, I and my Father are one, that's a great truth. Or when he says, be perfect even as your Father in heaven is perfect, that is again a great truth. But it is only when we read the scriptures here, the Vedic scriptures, that all these things are elaborately discussed by the rishis themselves, dialogues, and brought out. Point, counterpoint, discussion, everything is there to clarify the mind, the understanding of the scriptures. So Swami has said, once he asked the boy, who is a jnani? Jnani is one, a knower of truth. You know. Then he said, he is the one who has found the answer to 3 questions of life. Who am I? First question. Where do I come from? Second question. Where do I go? Third question. Actually, it is only one question. Who am I? But because we are in this dualistic state, we need to further elaborate. Ramana Maharshi says, who am I? You know, it's the same question. Where do I come from? Where do I go? And he gave the answers also. He said, if you know the answers, you are a jnani. He said, who am I? I am the Atman. Where do I come from? The Atman. Where do I go? The Atman. Now you are going from point A to point B. There is distance involved. There is time involved. There is a cause and effect involved. But if you are at point A, you're going back to point A, and you come from point A, then where is time, where is space, where is distance, where is cause and effect? B is superfluous. You have transcended time, you have transcended space, you have transcended cause and effect. That is the beauty of this realization of the one without a second. Transcended Maya, in other words. So Swami explains this in very simple terms in many, many different ways. Once he explained the third eye, we call it the third eye of Shiva, for example. He says that is the Jnana Chakshu. Chakshu means eye, no? And what are these eyes? Charma Chakshu. Fleshy eyes. Then he said, can you tell me what are the colors of your fleshy eye? He said, there's the white pupil, what is that, eyeball, there's the black pupil, and there's a red rim. So three colors, red, white, and black. Swami said, these are the three colors of the gunas. Sattva guna is white, rajo guna is red, tamo guna is black. So this charma chakshu can only see the three gunas in this external world. And three gunas are nothing but maya. Maya is bound by the three gunas. Sattvic, rajasic and tamasic gunas. So how can you see God with these eyes? You are seeing only the world of change, the world of differences, the world of opposites, the world of limitations with these eyes. Jnana Chakshu is what takes you beyond these limitations, the dualities of life. And so Jnana Chakshu has to be cultivated by all. It's not only for Shiva, it's for all of us. We all have that Jnana Chakshu, but it is closed. These eyes are open, but that eye is closed. The problem is we have to reverse it. Open the Jnana Chakshu and then the highest truth will be revealed. Yoga Vashishta, you know, you must have heard of that famous work of Vashishta Muni, the guru of Rama. In Yoga Vashishta, he gives discusses the nature of this truth with none other than Rama. Rama is a young boy of 16 and is full of vairagya. He has no interest in wealth, he has no interest in enjoyments, he has no interest in, he suddenly lost everything, ruling the kingdom. And Dasharatha is worried because he is the prince, crown prince, and he is not showing any interest in the affairs of the world. He calls Vashishta, the guru, the spiritual guru of the kingdom, a great jnani, Brahma jnani. He says, you please handle him, I don't know how to handle him. So Vashishta talks to Rama and he finds out that Rama is undergoing a very advanced stage of vairagya. And it's the right time for him to be granted this knowledge of the self, or the Atman. And the talks he gives, the dialogues he has, they are all put in this Yoga Vashishta. The dialogues with Rama. In that he expounds some of the truths, great truths which we are all trying to understand. And he tells one thing which strikes, you know. Strikes because in those days there were no such examples as we have now. They used to take from nature and explain things. He says, what exists in the beginning and what exists in the end also exists in the middle. Now this looks like a very elementary statement, even a schoolboy knows that. If something exists in the beginning and something exists in the end, it also should exist in the middle. For example, we have now the example of a screen and a picture. Before you project the picture on the screen, you see that the screen exists, blank. And then you project this film on the screen, and then you see the film. And at the end of the film, again, you see that the screen is blank. So what exists in the beginning, what exists in the end, also exists in the middle, means the screen is the basis, the foundation, the source. Without the screen, the picture cannot exist. But the screen can exist without the picture, but the picture cannot exist without the screen. There is a difference between the source and the force. Now when the film is projected, you are caught in it. You forget the screen. You cannot visualize the screen. You cannot cognize the screen. You can cognize only the picture. When the hero laughs, you laugh. When the hero cries, you cry. You see violence, you see fire, you see floods. You are excited, etc., etc. You have lost sight completely of the screen. You have got entangled into this world of change, in the world of duality. So what Vashishtha is saying, the screen exists in the middle also. Why are you forgetting that? If you can try to see the screen, then you will not cognize the picture. If you cognize the picture, you cannot see the screen. It depends on the way you look at things, your vision. So, Atma and Anatma, Adi Shankara talks about. The screen is the Atman and the picture is the Anatman. So we have to learn to differentiate. That is called Viveka. Separating the temporary from the permanent, the illusory from the real, everlasting. That is Viveka. Talking about Viveka, Vairagya and other qualities required. Normally we take Viveka to be in intelligence. It's not just intelligence, it is discrimination of the highest order. So there are many such great truths which Swami has explained. I think we're running short of time today, so we'll continue next time.
Srimatvadiya charitamrita mannayarya Srimatvadiya charitamrita mannayarya Pitva pinaiva Suhita Manuja Bhaveyuhu Pitva Pinaiva Suhita Manuja Bhaveyuhu Tvam Venkata Jalapadeva Bhakti Saram Tvam Venkata Jalapadeva नमो नमस्ते तंदनाही तंदनाना पुरे तंदनाना भल तंदनाना भल तंदनाना भल तंदनाना तंदनाही तंदनाना पुरे तंदनाना भल तंदनाना भल तंदनाना भल तंदनाना ಶ್ರೀಹರೆ ಅಂತರಾತ್ಮ ಕಂದುವ ಗುಹೀನಾದಿ ಕಮುಳಿಂದೂಲೇವು ಅಂದರಿಗೆ ಶ್ರೀಹರೆ ಅಂತರಾತ್ಮ ಹರೆ ಅಂತರಾತ್ಮ ಶ್ರೀಹರೆ ಅಂತರಾತ್ಮ ಇಂದುಲೋ ಜಂತುಕುಲ ಮಂತನು ಒಗದೇ ಅಂದರಿಗೆ ಶ್ರೀಹರೆ ಅಂತರಾತ್ಮ ಹರೆ ಅಂತರಾತ್ಮ ಶ್ರೀಹರೆ ಪಂಟು ನಿದ್ರ ದೇವನೊಕಡೆ ನಿಂದಾರ ರಾಜೋ ನಿದ್ರಿಂಚು ನಿದ್ರೆಯುನೊಕಟೆ ಅಂಡನೆ ಪಂಟು ನಿದ್ರ ದೇವನೊಕಡೆ ಮೆಂಡೈನ ಬ್ರಾಹ್ಮಣುಡು ಮೆಟ್ಟು ಭೂಮಿಯೊಕಡೆ ಚಂದಾಲುಡುಂಡೇ ತೇಸರಿ ಭೂಮಿಯೊಕಡೆ ಮೆಂಡೈನ ಬ್ರಾಹ್ಮಣುಡು ಮೆಟ್ಟು ಭೂಮಿಯೊಕಡೆ ಸುನಕಮು ಮೀದ ಬೊಡೆಯು ಎಂದೊಕಟೆ ಕಡಲಿ ಏನು ಹುಮೀನ ಕಾಯು ಎಂದೊಕಟೆ ಉಡಮಿ ಸುನಕಮು ಮೀದ ಬೊಡೆಯು ಎಂದೊಕಟೆ ಕಡಲಿ ಏನು ಹುಮೀನ ಕಾಯು ಎಂದೊಕಟೆ ಉಡಮಿ ಸುನಕಮು ಮೀದ ಬೊಡೆಯು ಎಂದೊಕಟೆ ಕಡು ಪುಣ್ಯುಲಗು ಪಾಪ ಕರ್ಮುಲನು ಸರಿಗಾವ ಜಡಿಯು ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ವರು ನಾಮ ಮೊಕಟೆ ಕಡು ಪುಣ್ಯುಳಗು ಪಾಪ ಕರ್ಮುಲನು ಸರಿಯಾವ ಜಡಿಯು ಶ್ರೀ ವೆಂಕಟೇಶ್ವರು ನಾಮ ಮೊಕಟೆ ತಂದನಾನಾಹಿ ತಂದನಾನ ಪುರೆ ತಂದನಾನ ಬಡ ತಂದನಾನ ಬಡ ತಂದನಾನ ಬಡ ತಂದನಾನ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಮೊಕಟೆ ಪರ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಮೊಕ್ಕಟೆ ಪರ ಪರ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಮೊಕ್ಕಡೆ ಪರ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಮೊಕ್ಕಡೆ ತಂದನಾನಾಹಿ ತಂದನಾನ ಬುರೆ ತಂದನಾನ ಬಳ 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 ತಂದನಾನ ಲೋಗುಮ ಶ್ರೀ ಸತ್ಯ ಸಾಯಿ ಆತ್ಮಡೋಲಿಕಲೋನ ಆನಂದದಾಯಿ ಆನಂದದಾಯಿ ವಿಯಾಲ ಲೋಗುಮ ಶ್ರೀ ಸತ್ಯ ಸಾಯಿ ಆತ್ಮಡೋಲಿಕಲೋನ ಆನಂದದಾಯಿ ಆನಂದದಾಯಿ
ಜಗದೋ ಭಾರಣ
ಜನಿಸಿದಳ್ ಯಶೋದ ಅಡಿಸಿದಳ್ ಯಶೋದ ಯಶೋದ ಜಗದು ಹರಣ ಅಡಿಸಿದ ಯಶೋದ ಜಗದು ಹರಣ ಜಗದು ಯಶೋದ ಮಗುಗಣ ಮಾಣಿಕ್ಯ ಅಡಿಸಿದ ಯಶೋದ ಮಗುಗಣ ಮಾಣಿಕ್ಯ ಅಡಿಸಿದ ಯಶೋದ ಮಗುಗಣ ಅಡಿಸಿದ ಯಶೋದ ಜಗದು ಅಣೋರಣ ಮಹತೋ ಮಹಿ ಯಶೋದ ಅಪ್ರಮೇಯನ ಅಡಿಸಿದ ಯಶೋದ ಅಪ್ರಮೇಯನ ಅಡಿಸಿದ ಯಶೋದ ಜಗದೋದ ಪರಮ ಪುರುಷ ಪರವಸು ದೇವನ ಪರಮ ಪುರುಷ ಪರವಸು ದೇವನ ಪರಮ ಯಶೋದ ಪುರಂದರ ವಿಠಲನ ಅಡಿಸಿದ ಯಶೋದ ಪುರಂದರ ವಿಠಲನ ಅಡಿ యశోద పునర్ధర విఠల అడిసిద యశోద జగదోధ అడిసిద యశోద జగదోధ కృష్ణ 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 ప్రేమ ముదిత మనసి కహో రామ 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 శ్రీరామ రామ రామ ప్రేమ ముదిత మనసి కహో రామ 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 శ్రీరామ రామ రామ పాప ఖడే దుఃఖ మిటే లేకె రామ నామ భవ సముద్ర సుఖద నావ ఏక రామ నామ రామ 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 శ్రీ రామ 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 పరమ శాంతి సుఖ నిదాన దివ్య రామ నామ నిరాధార కో ఆధార ఏక రామ నామ రామ 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 శ్రీ రామ 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 మాత పిత బంధు సఖ సభి రామ నామ భక్త జన జీవన ధన ఏక రామ నామ భక్త జన జీవన ధన ఏక రామ నామ రామ 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 శ్రీ రామ 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 శ్రీ రామ 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 శ్రీ రామ 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 శ్రీ రామ 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 శ్రీ సాయి రామ 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 శ్రీ రామ 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 శ్రీ సాయి రామ రామ సాయి రామ రామ.